Good evening and welcome to Connecting to Host, probably the best co-op and multiplayer focused gaming podcast on the entire internet.
It is quite a niche.
As long as we're the best at something, that's all that's important. So tonight we're going to be talking about Star Wars Battlefront, the old one, not the new one, not the second one. Fight for the Rebellion or the Empire in a wide variety of multiplayer matches for up to 40 players, or in exciting challenges inspired by the films, available in solo, split screen, or online co-op. You can pick up Star Wars Battlefront for around 25 quid at full price on PC, Xbox One, and PS4. If you have an EA Access or Origin Access subscription, then you'll get it as part of that, but it's so frequently on sale at the moment because the sequel is on the way. So, and you can even pick up the DLC at the moment for free if you happen to own the core game. So I think that's a time-limited thing. I'm not sure, but I think it's time-limited. But
yeah, quite a long time limit on it, though. It's like middle of October, I think, it ends.
When you'll probably have hopped onto the new one, unless you're trying to pick up a game for a cheap game to play. So we both actually started playing it on the Xbox One during the open beta, where we played it for a couple of days, I guess.
And way back in 2015.
Wow,
it was a long time ago. It must have been November, because it was just before Episode 7 came out.
It was 2015. Man, that was a long time ago.
Yeah, it didn't feel that long, but it was.
No. And then I continued to play it on the PS4 with my usual Friday night gang. And you went off and played it on the Xbox One. So we didn't really play it together that much then. And then we both recently picked it up on the PC as part of the Origin Access and got to try it out in ultra wide with our 1080p's, 1080 GTX 1080s. So yeah, it's been we've played it on pretty much everything, which is kind of cool.
Well, to be honest, we've not actually played it that much together. Together, we've probably played it for about 5 hours, maybe even less. Mm. But together, overall, we've probably played it for over 100 hours, because I've definitely played it for about 60 or 70.
Yeah, and I think I must have got 30 or 40 out of it, mostly on the PS4, but now a bit more recently on the PC. So. Cool. Do you want to tell us a bit about the game, Ben?
Yeah, so it's a bit of a weird one, because it's one of those annoying modern things where it's actually the third Battlefront game, but they've just called it Star Wars Battlefront, because it's like a reboot, because I think this is the first one that was done by EA, and it's all done with the Frostbite engine in DICE, which is, I mean, visually amazing. It does look really good. But I have a core memory of playing the earlier versions of this game back in 2005. I don't know if PS2? You remember it, but yeah, I imagine it was. We basically had all booked tickets at Exeter University to go to the midnight opening of Episode 3. We didn't know better. And in the day, we watched Episodes 4, 5, 6, 1, 2, and then played Battlefront until midnight, when we went to the cinema to then watch Episode 3. And then I think there was probably more Battlefront afterwards to erase it from our minds. So I was always very fond of this game. And I mean, it's basically first-person shooter in the Star Wars universe. That's the summary of the game. But roughly for this game, I mean, first of all, the key point is that there is no single-player campaign. There are a few cooperative missions which could be played offline with two people. You can also play them online, but there's no, like, campaign or anything like that. Mm. I mean, the real meat of this thing is the online multiplayer, which has a ton of modes, which we'll talk about in a minute. I mean, the majority is pretty standard fare. You've got weapon selections and loadouts that you unlock as you level up. They've got this star card system where you can take specific power-ups into battle, like jump packs, ion grenades. There's like power-ups lying around the place. You can get blaster turrets, thermal detonators. You can even jump into vehicles like the AT-AT or the TIE Fighter, or become a specific hero like Luke Skywalker, Han Solo, Emperor Palpatine, just to name a few. There's also various multiplayer modes, so you can go from 6v6 to huge 20v20 supremacy matches. So there's a huge swathe of multiplayer to enjoy here, but I mean, the multiplayer really is the core of it. They've done, I think, 5 pieces of DLC, which are all currently free, as you mentioned, and they add basically they're all the same. They all either add maps and characters. So you get things like Jakku, the Cloud City of Bespin, the Death Star, added heroes. They've put in things like Chewbacca, Greedo, Lando, hello, what have we here, Calrissian. They even added a Rogue One expansion pack that added the planet of Scarif and some of the characters from the film. But interestingly, there's nothing from Episode 7 or Episode 8, because that's beyond its time, apart from a battle on Jakku, which is actually set just after Episode 6. So it's very thematically Episodes 4, 5, 6. There's also nothing from the prequels. You're not going to fight on Mustafar or Coruscant or anything like that. It's all very much Episodes 4, 5, 6, and then this little Rogue One piece.
One thing worth mentioning is that there's a few of the, I mean, maps and scenarios where you only play in the aerial craft, right? There's a couple which are set kind of in space with the Star Destroyer in the background. That's pretty cool. I mean, it's obviously no FPS ground play on those maps. You just fly around your TIE fighters and destroy other X-Wings.
So. I mean, it's worth mentioning, and we'll probably get to it later when we talk about the graphics and stuff. But one of the things I love about this game is that the sky is always filled with stuff going on. Like, you really feel like you're in a war zone, because even when you're on Hoth and you've got like 20v20 plus a shit ton of AI things, AT-ATs, Y-wings above you in the sky, you'll just see lasers flashing across as people are like fighting Star Destroyers or whatever else is coming across. There's always something going on in the background. Interestingly, I didn't actually know about this until I did a little bit of research before recording this, but there is a virtual reality exclusive mission called Rogue One X-Wing VR Mission, and that was released for free on the PSVR, although it doesn't look like it's ever going to be released on PC. They've got a pretty good exclusivity on that.
Bastards. I've heard it's really good. I mean, it's apparently very short. I mean, you play it for 10 minutes or whatever, but
it's a free experience.
Very good.
Isn't it?
Very good, from what I've heard.
And then kind of almost tied into that, I'd lump it into the same category. There is a mobile app for Android and iOS that you can use to keep track of your character and their abilities and loadouts and stuff. And I tried it a few times, and it's definitely better than Splatoon 2's shitty Splatnet web app, which isn't hard. But I don't really see the point for these second screen apps. Interestingly, this one actually has like a full iOS game built into it called Base Command, which like unlocks all these different credits and stuff that you can then backport into the game. But it's one of those things that you look at it, and if I was sat playing it, I'd be like, why the fuck am I playing this when I could be playing Battlefront?
Like
the kind of people that are interested in playing an iOS real-time strategy game are not the kind of people that want to play a visually delicious first-person shooter generally. I don't feel there's much crossover, so it was an interesting design choice. But
I quite like it when a game has so the Destiny game, I guess it probably has it for Destiny 2 now that it's out, but the original Destiny, you could just look at your characters, look at your inventory, and check up a few things. So now and then when you are out and about and you are talking about your character or something you found, you could pull out your phone and have a look. But that was enough, you know, for me. That's like, that's kind of cool. I'm not gonna use it tons and tons, but generally every time I've found a game that's a shooter with a companion app, I've downloaded it. And every now and then, especially when you're learning the game, you're like, I unlocked 3 or 4 weapons last night. I don't know anything about them and I never use them. Maybe I'll check them on my phone because then I'll know what I've got and I'll be able to pick it before next time I play. So I have made use of those little apps a little bit, but I certainly haven't gone in them hoping to play a game.
No.
This is weird.
I don't want to get into the weeds on this, but the only one of those that I've ever liked was the original Titanfall had a iPad companion app. It was a separate app. It wasn't Smart Glass. It was a separate app where you got the entire map on the screen.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was really useful because the map was actually tiny in the corner on Titanfall. So it was nice to have a massive map which showed you the full overview and where everyone was and stuff. And I really liked that, but I've never really liked these little check your loadout type things. But in any case, tell us about the multiplayer modes, Jada.
Yeah, there's a bucket ton of them, so I'll try and skip through them pretty quick. So the Supremacy mode is the big 20v20, I'd say like the capstone battle mode for the game, which you play over 10 minutes, and there are 5 control points where you have to capture them all to win, essentially. So you work your way through them one at a time. You have to do them in order, right?
Yeah.
And it's a bit of a tug of war, which I quite liked. I think I really got into it when they released the Jakku DLC. Yeah. Maybe they even released a game mode with that. I'm not sure if it was there before. I remember playing it a lot from that point onwards.
So that yeah, I think you're thinking of the Turning Point mode. Jakku, yes. Which is kind of like Walker Assault, but it was the Jakku one. But it was very similar that you had the hard points that you had to capture in a certain order. So it's not like Hardpoint in Titanfall where you have A, B, C.
No, you're right. You're
obviously,
right.
If you have point. B and C, someone can steal A. Whereas in this, if you've got points 1, 2, 3, 4... they have to take point 4 before they can take point 3 before they can take point 2. So, as you say, tug of war is a good description for it.
Mm. But then there's the Walker Assault, which is another 20v20 battle, which is really impressive, I've got to say. When you've got that many guys running around the screen, it feels pretty cool to see a horde of rebels or the Imperials marching down towards you. But that is really cool because it's thematic based on the Hoth defense. So the Imperials get the AT-ATs that stomp through the battle, right? And you have to call in the Y-Wings at certain points. So you accrue Y-Wings by basically winning the battle for certain periods. And at the end of each wave or each third of the map, the Y-Wings come in and they can be used to bomb the AT-ATs, and you have to destroy the AT-ATs before they reach your base. So that's an interesting... Again, another interesting game mode, which is a bit different to most other games.
There was a real problem with that, which is that the Y-Wings aren't like automatic. Like, you call them in, but it's going to be some dude on your team.
Yeah.
So if they've not flown before, which is common because the flying is very different to the rest of the game. So quite often, the first time that people experienced flight was in one of these Walker Assault missions. And they'd be like, whoa, and their Y thing's inverted, crash it. And it's like, oh, because as soon as the Walkers get to your base... you lose. And so there was like a huge controversy at the beginning of this game where everyone complained that if you were the rebels on Walker Assault, you'd never win. And that was certainly true when we played it. Like, we fought hard, but the Imperials always win. Always. Like, very, very rarely they don't if you've got people that are really good at flight, but generally they always win.
Yeah. Then there's the cargo mode, which was a smaller 6v6 mode, which I only played a couple of times. But in that, you have to capture 5 pieces of cargo. And the team who has the most cargo in the base at the end of the match wins the round. So I guess this is the closest that Battlefront has to a capture the flag mode. But it's a very similar affair with some slightly different rules. Then there's a droid run mode, which I literally played once, I think. It just didn't click with me.
It's
another 6v6. Yeah, I just remember it. Sort of, I didn't dislike it, but there's so many modes. And I think primarily I just like to play the Blast or the Walker Assault. But 6v6 objective battle where you have to capture and hold three droids that are wandering around the map. And this is very similar to Hardpoint in Titanfall. Then there's Blast Mode, which is a 10v10 battle where you score points for kills. Simple as that. I guess this is as close as you can get to the... Because in the old Battlefront games, you basically just had 100 guys, right? I mean, you only ever have 8 or 16 on the map, for 8 on each side on the map. But it was based on the premise of, your army is 100 guys. You have to kill the other 100 guys first. And that was the way they did it. And this doesn't count them down. It counts up like points for kills. But I guess in that way, it's actually pretty similar. And it obviously runs out after 10 minutes or so if you haven't managed to kill 100 bad guys.
It's basically, I never like to always compare everything to Titanfall, but it's the closest touchstone I have because it's the only first-person shooter I really play. But it's basically attrition, isn't it? It's just team versus team, and there's a shit ton of stuff. Some of it's AI, some of it isn't. I mean, in this instance, you're all human, but
yeah,
10v10 is still pretty meaty for a first-person shooter. I mean, it's not the 20v20 of the Walker Assault, but it's still pretty significant, 20 people.
And I think the maps on the smaller numbers were typically smaller, or they did some. All those game modes do something like having focal points. You have to get the cargo, for instance, which draw you together more. Mm. So, it never felt like it really rarely felt like the map was empty and you can't find anyone in any of these game modes.
The blast mode is very similar to Splatoon 2, where you get like a natural, what I like to call like a front or a no man's land, where there is a very natural border happens. So the one that I always remember in Blast is there's like a hangar on Hoth, I think. And there's always just one bit where people are stuck in a corridor chucking grenades down it, and everyone's trying to run up the corridor to shoot the people. Yeah. And it's sort of like, wait for all the grenades, then run up and then dodge the blasters and shoot. And you get these very natural sticking points of action. It works.
Yeah, it's it nearly always felt like there was something going on and you knew where it was, which is nice. So then there's the drop zone mode, which is 8v8. You notice they all have slightly different numbers just to make it confusing. Where drop pods land on the map, and this is something which also happens in the co-op game modes, these little drop pods thump into the ground from the sky. But in this zone, in this mode, then you need to capture them. So you have to stand by them for a certain amount of time, you capture them, and a number of power-ups kind of pop out. And the first team to open 5 drop pods wins the game. Then there's Heroes versus Villains, which is a 6v6 battle mode where 3 of the players on the team at the beginning of a round will be given a hero or a villain. So there'll be a team of heroes and a team of villains. I found this really frustrating, to be honest, because you either got to be Luke Skywalker or Darth Vader or a Mook. And obviously, if you're a Mook, you just get your ass handed to you. So it's like, oh, great, that was fun.
Yeah.
While the heroes battle it out. The heroes I found across the board were just a little bit overpowered. I mean, they're meant to be, right, because they're heroes. But when you see one, you're like,
I think they're totally, utterly wank, but I'm going to get to that later on. So.
Then there's a Hero Hunt mode, which is an 8-player game mode, which I guess is essentially kind of a 7v1, because a random player is made into the hero or villain each round, and everyone else is out to kill them. So that shows you the balance, I guess. It's expected that one hero will kill 7 people. So, and the points are actually allocated on the damage done, right? So, I mean, the hero has to survive as long as possible.
Yeah, again, not to compare it to Titanfall, but it is... what's that mode called? Not Pilot Hunter. It was called... what was it called?
Yeah,
it's the one where they literally shows you, and it's like, he's over there, go kill him. And like, you all run after him. And yeah, I can't remember what it's called.
I want to say it's not Last Man Standing, but it's...
Something like that.
Or Manhunter or something, right?
Something like that.
Something like that, yeah. But in this, I guess the one character gets...
It's quite a boost.
I mean, better boosting. I think in Titanfall you would get like a map hack or something permanently, right? But in this, you get fucking superpowers and you can
you
throw your lightsaber around. Yeah.
Unless you're Leia, cool. And then you get a shield.
But, yes.
You never want to be Leia in a hero mode. Oh, I got this little shield. Yay. This shitty blaster.
And then there's Fighter Squadron mode, which we mentioned before, but that's where you have only aerial vehicles. So 10v10 aerial vehicle battle. And they kind of have heroes as well. They have the Slave One or the Millennium Falcon, which you pick up a little token. And then when you pick it up, you can use the hero ship. And there's a whole bunch of AI ships flying around, which is really cool because it really adds to the atmosphere that you're outside of a Star Destroyer watching all the hordes of TIE fighters coming out. So that's pretty cool.
It's very Lila Wars.
Yeah, yeah. And then they have the transport ships that move through, and one team will have to defend them while the other team has to try to destroy them before they get to a certain point. And each team gives you 2 regular ships. So it's X-Wings and Y-Wings, right, for the Rebels, or the TIE
A-wings,
fighters and the... A-Wings. Yeah, you're right. Or it's the TIE fighters and the kind of advanced TIE fighters.
Yeah, TIE bombers, yeah.
Yeah. So. Yeah, so that's a lot of game modes, as you can tell, but all multiplayer variants, so like PvP variants.
I'll talk about the co-op briefly. I mean, I guess the co-op's difficult. I mean, it has no single player, realistically, but they have this system called missions, which is basically you can play it on your own or you can play it with 2 players, and the 2 players can be locally, so if you've got like 2 Xbox controllers or 2 PS4 controllers or whatever, or you can do it online. So we did it online on the Xbox beta. I believe we had a couple of survival modes on Tatooine, if I recall correctly. So first of all, there are 5 training missions. And these are really suited to one player. Like, there's no point in doing this for two players. And they basically teach you very short. They teach you the basics of the different modes. So there's one where you fly. What's that? Beggar's Canyon. You fly through Beggar's Canyon shooting womp rats and then some TIE fighters and stuff. Which is pretty cool, but it's really just needs to be one player. If you've got two players, it doesn't matter.
I think it makes it harder, right? It's a long time ago, but I have this feeling like you have to do it in a certain time. But obviously when there's two of you, you have to both do it under that certain time. And you get in each other's way. So
we both know that I'm a total Chivo whore. And there is an achievement for doing the Beggar's Canyon run in under a certain amount of time, but you need it with two players. And so I made my wife start a game with her controller, and then I just controlled it for her because it was easier than getting her to try and do it. But yeah, the five train missions are bollocks, really. I mean, there's one where you get to play as Palpatine and you go around just like killing people with your shot cans to show you how hero modes work. There's the flight one. There's one where you're flying around on a, what are those bikes that go whoo?
The speeders.
Speeders, that's one. Which is awesome. I mean, it's really cool, but they're like 4 minutes long and you're like,
they're not challenging either, are they?
Awesome. No. So the other part, the part that you will actually play, dear listener, the co-op, is the four survival modes. So there are literally four maps. You survive 15 waves of enemies. And the nice thing is you can choose from all of the weapons and loadouts in the game. Like, you don't have to just do the ones you've unlocked in the multiplayer mode. You get access to everything. So it's a good way of trying stuff out before you've unlocked it. And there's like a shared pool of lives. So you have two lives between you. So if I die twice and come back to life, then John gets nothing. And there's no like revive mechanic or anything like that. And it's good, but it is repetitive very, very quickly. Because
the arenas were pretty small, right?
The arenas are small. The waves are pretty much always the same. It's like, oh, some mooks. Oh, some more mooks. Some mooks with rockets. More rocket mooks. Oh, an AT-ST. Oh, blah, 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 blah. And it's just like, they try to liven it up a bit by adding like this star rating thing where if you kill in a certain time frame or you find some collectibles that are just lying around, because you know when you're trying to fight off 15 waves of stormtroopers, you're searching around in Endor to find some fucking collectible wallpaper. Not dying, stuff like that. So it has a little bit like if you really wanted to get to 5 stars each, but there's only four maps, so it's like you could probably, you know, spaff it out in an hour. It's not a huge chunk of content. It's nothing. It's pointless.
And it was a shame because it was potentially, it could have been a horde mode like thing, which is a bit more challenging and a bit more variation, but it just didn't hit the mark. It was.
No. Like, I mean, like, honestly, would we rather play horde mode on this or would we rather play Salmon Run in Splatoon 2? Like,
yeah,
for me personally,
Splatoon, right?
I love Star Wars, but I'd rather play Splatoon 2 Salmon Run because it's a bit more random. You don't know what's going to happen. It's a bit more. There's four people for a start, not just two.
Like, yeah, that was a big killer too.
Why are you going to have two people in Tatooine fighting off like 200 members of the Empire? It makes no sense. It's pointless. So, so that's co-op. So, yeah.
Yeah, let's move on. Let's just go on to a few more of the game specifics. So,
tell us about the stuff that is basically the same across all modes, like all the different weapons and shit.
So, as you mentioned, there's a whole bunch of different weapons you can get, from blaster pistols to rifles to rocket launchers and sniper rifles. What's pretty different about this game is that you don't have ammunition, so you never have to worry about running out of ammo. The weapons do overheat, so if you fire too fast in quick succession, then you get a little almost Gears of War-like cooling cycle. Where if you push the button at just the right time, you can vent it early. Otherwise, you just have to wait the full 3 or 4 seconds for it to cool, and then you can start firing again. And that's kind of interesting. I still find myself, when I'm playing on PC, constantly mashing the R button between fights to try and reload, because that's just the reflex of an FPS. But yeah, it doesn't matter. it will cool down anyway. But it's kind of nice that you don't have to. For some reason, I'm out in the battlefield and I'm carrying 90 bullets, like 3 clips. You know, I'm expecting to kill 10 people, and it's going to be 2 people per clip, maybe, because I'm not going to hit every bullet. But there's still bullet sponges. Yet, I've only got enough clips to kill, like, three people.
And I constantly, after maybe 60 hours of play of this game, I still reflexively take cover so I can reload. And then it's like, yeah. I don't need to.
Or the normal.
And you can just hold the button down and it'll just go bom, 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 and fire as fast as it can, which is sometimes better than trying to click or tap as quick as you can, because it will actually fire quicker because they all have different, you know, refresh rates, I guess, whatever you'd call it. But it is different to most every other game where you're used to shooting bullets.
Yeah, and I
really enjoyed about it.
I did like it. And while there's a lot of guns, the one thing I felt was a criticism was they didn't really feel that different because they all fired a little lazy. Yeah, there were faster ones and shorter range and long range ones, but because they all fired these, you know, red laser bolts, I don't know, they never felt that different. I found two or three weapons that I would switch between, never use anything else, because I'm like, I don't really know the difference between these four rifles or these nine pistols. I just know that I think this one, the internet tells me, is the best, so I will use this one. Plus, it takes fucking forever to unlock them anyway.
Oh, it does, yeah. And they change things like the amount of damage or the amount of time you can shoot them. There are nuances between them. But like you say, because the graphic is the same in terms of the shooting, because the weapons are actually different depending on whether you're Rebel or Imperial, which screws me over every time. Sometimes when I'm in Imperial, I'm like, oh, I use the blaster rifle because I prefer that to their pistol. And so I start the game and I'm like, why have I got a rifle? I want a pistol. And it's like, oh yeah, I'm Imperial this time. And it's kind of like, it's not like Titanfall where you have, it doesn't matter what side you are, everything's the same. They are different for each side as well, which some people will love because it's like, oh, there's a lot of nuance and it's a bit different. And other people will hate because it's like, I wish it was just consistent and I could use the same gun all the time. But there it is.
Right, let's crack on. So next up, there's the star card system, where before the battle, you can pick three cards to make up your hand. One of them is chargeable, so it's you'll find little charges on the map, and you fairly infrequently, but you find them now and then you can use the ability to increase your damage for 20 seconds, or usually a slightly bigger or longer term effect, while the other two are ones where you can use them once and then they recharge over time. So for instance, there's a bowcaster or an ion grenade or other grenade-like weapons. That's just a fairly simple loadout system, which helps you build your characters. Then there's a bunch of power-ups that you find around the map, and these are generally little glowing tokens that float around. So you run through one, and you're like, ha-ha, I found a power-up. You figure out what it is, hopefully, and it will sit underneath your weapons and your star cards in the corner of the screen. And they range from, I think they are always one use things, ranging from kind of a more powerful grenade or a automatic turret that you can drop, calling in orbital strike, or even you now get to respawn as Luke Skywalker, or you get to respawn in an X-Wing. So they're pretty cool when you find them, and they're definitely worth hunting down, and they mix up the game. That's generally where the heroes and the ships come in, which is kind of cool. So, then to encourage you to grind and play more and more, because all of these things cost an awful lot of credits in the game, there are challenges, so you can have up to three goals at a time, and when you hit that goal, you'll get a bunch of credits. So it might be get 25 kills with a specific rifle, capture 10 drop pods, get a 5-kill streak or something. And if you think you've got one that you definitely can't do, then you can drop a bunch of cash to get rid of it and get another one. Although I did that the other day and I got a worse one, which is like, oh man.
I spent like 1,000 credits the other day. It was like, get 25 kills in cargo run. It's like, don't play that mode, next. It's like, get 10 kills in water assault, next. Get 5 kills and thing, next. And I spent like 1,000 credits. And then the one I got was like, get 10 kills with blast rifle. And I didn't. It's like, here's your reward, 50 credits. It's like,
harsh man.
I mean, it's good. It just kind of encourages you to play other modes. But
yeah.
Yeah.
But they're not really game breaking if you ignore them, basically. I mean,
no.
I generally did the ones I had that I could do and didn't worry about the rest. And yeah, it's just nice to get a little bonus now and then. The last thing I think worth mentioning are the HUT contracts. So essentially, just different challenges that you can do that are generally a bit more involved. But when you complete them, you unlock a specific gun. So instead of just getting credits, which you can accrue and spend on star cards and guns and costumes, they would just unlock a gun. Wait, yeah, it's kind of a nice addition. That came in one of the DLCs, right? That wasn't there at the start.
Yeah, so. And it unlocks like weapons that you don't have yet. So like there might be a weapon that you get at level 32 or something. But if you do a HUT contract level 14, you might be able to unlock it in advance. So it's kind of like Titanfall 2 in the way that you can buy a specific weapon before you're supposed to get it. It's kind of like that mechanic, but it's a bit more random than that because you don't get to choose what you get. You have to... Well, I suppose you can, because I think you can pay a shit ton of coins to say...
To buy
no,
it anyway.
I don't want this one, I want the other challenge and just cycle through them like we just said. But it's still pretty good. To be honest, I've not tried it because I've not got to level 14 in the PC mode. So I've not tried it since they added it, but it looks good.
Yeah, always nice to give you some other things to do in these sorts of games, a bit of metagame to play, right?
Anything that has Jabba the Hutt in is good with me. Han Solo.
Oh, yeah. Right, let's move on to our likes and dislikes. So I'm going to kick it off with... we can't not say it given the visuals that you see on all of the videos and the gameplay, but I mean this game is gorgeous. So whether you're playing it on console or PC with presumably anywhere on the required settings, I think you're going to be looking at a gorgeous game for your hardware. Runs really well. You get a lot of really cinematic, cool stuff going on, like you were saying with the space battles in the sky. You kind of look up and, oh shit, there's a little Star Destroyer with little TIE fighters flying around it. Even when you're on a land battle and it doesn't really matter. It's just, they evoke the feeling of the film so well.
That's exactly right. Evoking the feeling of the film, you really feel like you're there in one of these things. And one of the nicest things is all the Star Wars audio that clips into that. So... It starts off with little things like the blasters sound correct. You've got things like little droids that go around going bloop, 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 that sound right. And then suddenly you hear the roar of a TIE fighter going whoosh as it goes over. And it's like, oh, it's so good. But one of the really nice touches is when you're playing something like Walker Assault or Supremacy or even in Drop Pods, once the tide has turned and you're starting to win, the music just swells up. So if you're playing as Imperial, you suddenly just go bam, 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 and you sort of, you psychologically feel yourself pushing harder. You're like, it really energizes you in the moment of it, and it really makes it feel film-like. It is
so evocative, isn't it? It's great.
Truly, definitely. Without a doubt, one of the best Star Wars games. I mean, there are a lot of shit Star Wars games. looking at you, Galactic Battlegrounds, the skin of Civilization 2. But this, along with something like Knights of the Old Republic, is like one of those games that really feels Star Wars.
Yeah, there is no question about that. And I mean, whether you're on Hoth or Endor or any of the places, they just look and feel and sound exactly like you would expect from the film. I mean, they have done a cracking job. And add on top of that, the stunning fidelity of the graphics. I mean, that was why I bought it, basically. And, it was a good game, but that was why I bought it.
Yeah. One of my favourite effects in the game is the thermal detonator, which is a grenade you throw, and then it just goes... Everything goes silent, and it just goes... And it sounds exactly like the ones that... Jango Fett fires against Obi-Wan in episode 2, which in the director's commentary, they apparently said to John Williams, there's going to be no soundtrack in this part. And he was like, what the fuck? What do you mean there's going to be no soundtrack in this bit? And they're like, no, it needs to be silent so that these thermal detonators sound really good. And they do. And even now playing it, as soon as I chuck one of those, it feels heavy. And all the blasters
have
thermal
imploder,
really good
right?
sound.
I think it's the imploder that makes that kind of...
Yeah, and then...
It's like sucking in air and then it explodes.
I believe, and I'm going to nerd out with some Star Wars stuff here. I believe the only time we ever saw it was episode 2, but in episode 6, Leia threatens Jabba with one because she's holding it when she goes to rescue Han, but never actually detonates it, but you see it, and that's the image they use on the star card that you collect for it. But yeah, that sounds so weighty and so great. Mm. I love that sound effect.
Yeah.
It's worth it. It's worth the £25 for that sound effect. I would go that far.
Right, your next like.
Good oh, yeah, sorry. So I would say, I literally just said it just then, but basically there is a huge amount of weapons and power-ups that you unlock. I like the gradual unlocking of stuff. It makes you feel like you're working towards something, which I think we discussed in other games that I felt a little bit more, I need something to grind towards, especially in a first-person shooter, because there's fuck all story here, so I need something to keep me interested. And so it's nice to have stuff to work towards, particularly the one that you will, like nearly everybody will get to level 13, because that's when you get the jump pack, and that's basically a jetpack that you press a button and you go poof, with a nice sound effect and you fly up in the air, and it's awesome.
Yeah, that's basically a given, right? Once you get to 13, you use it for at least a while.
Oh yeah, the Boba Fett jump pack, that's stuck in my left hand card slot, that'll never disappear. So yeah, huge amount of choice. It's nice.
And I always tout variety as something I like in these games, and there are a lot of game modes. I mean, they're not all going to be for everyone, but even so, when we play, we dart between them. Hey, let's have a nice big 20 by 20 battle. Let's do some space battles only in Fighter Squadron. Maybe we can try the turning point on Jakku, or let's just settle for some blast. But you know, it's nice that you can mix it up, even if they don't all hit home with you, I'm sure you'll find three or four that you really like, and you can cycle through them. It's nice to mix it up a little bit.
Kind of to pick up on that, one of my favourite modes is kind of like almost like the runt of the litter. It's like the only one that's different to all the rest, which is the Fighter Squadron mode. Mm. And the reason I love it is because it feels like a completely different game. Like, it kind of feels like you're playing what was that game on the GameCube? X-Wing Fighter Squadron or something like that. I forget. I remember they got really impressed because they were like, oh yeah, we got a Super Star Destroyer and it's made of 1 million polygons. And everyone was like, oh, holy shit, 1 million polygons. And now it's like, yeah, the face of R2-D2's got 2 million polygons in this game, probably. It's like a completely arbitrary measure. But the Fighter Squadron mode, I absolutely love. I probably played half the time that I played in this game in Fighter Squadron mode because I loved flying around in the TIE Fighter. Just the sound of it really,
yeah,
as you said, just evokes Star Wars. And you sort of get this nice as you crane around and someone's flying around as the Millennium Falcon. You're trying to take them down and then shoot down some TIE Fighters. It's wonderful. It's a really, really good mode. And it genuinely feels like a different game because it's not a first-person shooter at that point. It's an aerial third-party, third-person view battle. It's very strange.
They've got the controls down quite nicely on that. I mean, it's not easy to control. Like it's not
intuitive.
Hard, but it's not super easy. But you have the kind of targeting and tracking, so it's not impossible either. It's just a nice balance of, yeah, you need a bit of skill to do this well. But you can kill the AI reasonably easy, and then you have to have some challenge against the players, which is how it should be, so you can enjoy yourself in this mode.
Just, I should correct myself one point there. This isn't actually a first-person shooter, because you can, in nearly every mode, I think apart from the hero modes, which are always third-person, all the other modes you can choose between first-person and third-person. And I think I nearly always played in third-person, so it's...
I always play first.
It's not a first-person shooter necesserily.
Well, there's
certainly
one more
isn't
thing
if you want to play heroes. But go on, sorry.
One more thing I wanted to mention as a like before we move on, and that's the kind of co-op. They've added a few little features to make co-op a little bit more fun. So there's the when you're higher level than me, like you started playing it on PC before me, and I didn't really have any star cards I could pick. I could take your hand, which is quite nice. So I could just say, you know what, I'll play with whatever my partner's using for his cards. So that was really nice because it meant I got a hand of cards even though I was playing it early on because I could just copy your loadout. And the other thing that's nice is that you can spawn on your squad mate. So when you start the game, you partner up with a buddy. And if you die and they're not directly in combat or super, super bad danger, then you can choose just to spawn behind them, which is nice because it means you get to stick together. In a lot of games, you stick together for the first kill and then you realise you're on opposite ends of the map. You're like, ah, whatever. But in this, you can genuinely, oh, okay, I died. Go and find some cover somewhere. Ah, now I'll spawn behind you and we can go around as a little duo again. So that's quite nice. I mean, it's still not like a true co-op game or anything, but it was nice that they put a little touch or two in so that you did stick together more and it felt like we were playing a bit more teamworky than Titanfall. Not like hugely, yeah, but absolutely more than Titanfall. So,
and you nice. Get the same thing like in the mini map. There's like a big yellow marker to show where your partner is.
Mm.
So you can get to them relatively easily, which is, you know, pretty much par for the course nowadays. But the star card thing is nice.
Yeah.
Speaking of spawning and stuff, I'm going to jump into the dislikes. And this has the usual sort of like EA first person shooter dice system battlefield thing, where it spawns you just a little bit too close to the action for my liking. So in Supremacy, for example, where you've got 20v20, you spawn, you die, you spawn, you die, you spawn, you die, you spawn, you shoot at someone, you miss, they kill you, you die, you spawn, you die. And it's just like a constant like, oh, for fuck's sake. And it's one of those games where you look at it and you get to the end and it's like, yeah, I got 5 kills in that game and I died 28 times. Wow. Okay.
There is a kind of fairly interesting solution to that, and that is not being shit. No.
I knew you were going to say that, motherfucker. But that's my point. It's like, I keep going back to it, but in Titanfall, oh, Titanfall's so great. I fucking love Titanfall. I've done 300 hours. In Titanfall, when you spawn quite a long way back from the action, and then you take like 20 seconds to get there, and then you take your pot shots.
Mm.
Whereas in this, you're literally like, quite often you would spawn, and then you instantly die. Like, I have spawned underneath the foot of an AT-AT before, or where someone's doing a bombing run in a TIE fighter or something, and it's like, come on, you could spawn me somewhere a little bit better than that. Like, I get that you want me to be in the action and for it to be like this enveloped Saving Private Ryan kind of feel, but put me 2 seconds away. Like, give me a chance to fucking get my bearings before I get a laser in the face. It seems a little bit harsh. Harsh sometimes. Yeah.
One of the things that we quite often avoid shooters on the PC, both because I think they're generally a bit more hardcore and maybe we don't always put that many hours in, so I think it's a little bit easier to get ahead on the console, but also because of cheaters. And I was kind of hoping that when we came to this game recently, the cheaters would have left or they'd kind of done enough work to minimize the impact. But it was...
No.
We played 5 or 6 matches in one night and 4 of them had this same fucking guy who was running around at the top and clearly cheating because he's like jumping in the air and getting headshots and, you know, he had 42 kills and 0 deaths by the end of it. And you're like, yeah, that's just bullshit.
The difficulty with it as well is that there is a certain sowing of negative seeds whereby... In a console game, if you lose to someone that's better than you, you can say, oh, that was bullshit, that was lucky, blah, blah, blah. But you can very rarely say they cheated because it kind of doesn't work that way. Whereas on PC, the default is just to go, yeah, they cheated. So yeah. For all I know, that guy had been playing for 2,000 hours and was actually just really amazing at it. But the default reaction of everybody is to say he's cheating because he beat you. And so... At a certain point, you're not sure whether it's someone that's cheating or it's a bruised ego. And then everyone goes, oh, he's cheating. Oh, he's fucking cheating. Yeah, oh, cheat, 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 cheat. And then everyone reports them.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it's kind of like a insidious negativity, which, like, I don't care if they're cheating or they're good. It really doesn't matter if they've beat me because I still feel like shit because they beat me. But it's kind of just you get this negative swell of discussion that just makes you feel grubby and just go, you know what, I'd rather just play something else.
Yeah, I agree.
Which is a shame. I'll just mention very quickly, because we've been going on long enough about this game, but in dislikes, the heroes I think are fucking shit. I hate the heroes. There are a number of things I hate about it. One, they're ridiculously overpowered, which, yeah, it's part of the Star Wars universe. You want to be Anakin doing the whole Mustafar. No! Cutting people up. Not the younglings. But the problem is, because it's third person or even from first person, when you see Luke, the animation just looks utterly shitty. It looks like Terrence and Philip. It's like amateur hour. Because when you have a stormtrooper doing like a strafey left-right jump pack, it's kind of permissible. But when you see Luke Skywalker strafe jumping around the place and his arms aren't moving with his knees, and so he's just like... He's like a fucking line dancer with his legs apart, just sprinting up and down like Zebedee from the Magic Roundabout with a lightsaber, just strumming people down. It just looks fucking stupid. And it kind of, it kills, like we talked at length about how immersive and evocative this game is. And then when you see Skywalker just hoedowning around the place, he just looks a twat. When you've seen Darth Vader teabag someone, that's when you're done with this game.
But I've also got a... I don't know, I'm in two minds on the from a game design on this, because on the one side, it is cool, but in Titanfall, you earn the ability over time, so everyone gets a fair chance to be in a Titan. Whereas in this, it's the person who runs the pickup quickest every time, and the people who know where they are get the pickups over and over. And you never get a chance to be Luke Skywalker. So it's a double whammy. Not only do you get killed 7 times in a row by Luke Skywalker, you don't even get to play him because someone else finds the fucking pickup every time first. So it's like, Whereas at least in Titanfall, when you get crushed by a Titan 5 or 6 times, you get to be in a Titan soon and do the same back to someone else. So that was my biggest gripe with it, is that it is kind of cool. And if it was more fairly distributed by the players on the team, I think I'd enjoy it more. But it's frustrating when you just constantly see these heroes or villains and you never get to be them. It's like, ugh.
But
let's move on to our...
From a storytelling perspective as well, all heroes in the Star Wars universe are not equal. Like, Palpatine should be able to kill everyone. Palpatine versus Han Solo is not a fair fight. Like, Han Solo's amazing. You can shoot with a pistol. He can shoot fucking electric out of his hands. Like, there is no contest between Palpatine and anyone else. Leia has a shield. That is all she has over a normal soldier. And it's like, why is she massacring huge swathes of people? But anyway, final comments. It's not relevant to this podcast, but the single player is utterly shit. It's very much the Titanfall effect, or maybe even Splatoon 1, where they've gone, hey, let's make this amazing multiplayer game. Oh yeah, people might want to play it single player. Well, let's shoehorn in this shit mode. And it's terrible. But the sequel is determined to fix it. Battlefront 2 has a honest-to-goodness campaign. And if it's half as good as Titanfall 2 managed to do with a single player, then it should be very good indeed. But
yeah,
we'll
hopefully
see.
The campaign will be cut up as well. I'm not sure. I have no idea.
Yeah, don't buy this. Titanfall, but do not buy this for co-op or for single player. Buy this for multiplayer stuff. It's basically my point.
Yeah, I agree. Completely agree. Just for one really quick comment was that there were a couple of games when we played, and for some really random reason, it's like, hey, here's all the cards. You get to pick any of them for one match. And maybe something was happening, or there was some event or something that I missed, some pop-up, but I have no idea. But you're like, oh, I've got all these cool powers. And they take them away from you on the next one. You're like, huh, bastards.
Jetpacking around the map being like, yeah, I finally unlocked the jetpack. And it's like, no, you've got 10 levels to go, fucker.
So yeah, that was weird.
Final thing for me is just that there is a decent mixture of achievements if you're into that. Like, they put some thought into them. There's a good variation of... You know, it makes you want to play all the different modes, makes you want to try all the different guns. The achievements work as an achievement system should to make you get more out of the game than you would have without it. It doesn't just reward you for stuff you were going to do anyway. So
yeah.
I really liked that from my perspective on the Xbox. Obviously, on Origin, I couldn't give a shit, but on the Xbox...
They're not really
achievements. I care.
No. Cool, so we always ask two questions at the end of each show. And that's, would we play it again, and would we recommend it? Ben, would you like to kick it off?
I'm going to be slightly controversial on this, because obviously Star Wars Battlefront 2 is coming up. So would I play this again? Fuck no. Why would I? It's 2 years old. Like, why would I? But I would definitely like to play it again, and I'm hoping to convince you to buy it on Xbox One rather than PlayStation 4. I say Xbox One, it'll be Xbox One X for me. Because I want to play this in 4K. But I'm hoping to convince you that you'll get it on the Xbox platform so we can actually play it and maybe even review it again. But I wouldn't play the original again. I think it's good. If you've got EA Origin access, you've got it for free, then, you know, shits and giggles, download it, play it for a few hours. It's still good. I played it just recently on PC and absolutely loved it still, so it's worth playing, but obviously you're going to play the sequel now if you're going to play anything. Comes out in November, I think.
Yeah. No, I think I have a very similar opinion. I mean, slightly more favourable. I wouldn't mind just playing it for the odd hour or two again, and I might just pick a couple more hours up before the sequel comes out. But yeah, obviously when the sequel does come out, I guess this is going to be fairly dead in the water, unfortunately. You know, so I mean, we're a bit late reviewing this game, but we just wanted to get in because the new one's coming out and the hype is coming back a bit for us. So, but yeah, I mean, it is fun. I can kind of recommend it. It's just like you say, with the new one coming out, I wouldn't buy it at a very high price. But if you've got EA access or Origin access, then definitely just download it. I mean, even just to see the gorgeous graphics and have a bit of an experience to warm you up for the sequel, fluff you for the sequel, then it's worth it for that. And it is a good experience. So yeah. But
agreed.
Not that much life left in it. So anyway, thanks for listening. You can check out more of our episodes on our website at www.connectingtohost.co.uk. We have a whole bunch of previous shows that you can go and listen to now, from Titanfall 2 to Don't Starve Together. So go check those out. Hit us up on Twitter if you have any feedback or want us to pick up a specific game for a future show. Please, if you like the show, then head over to iTunes and leave us a review. Thanks ever so much for listening.